Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Looking back to 2016 with Sergio Bustos of Politico, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Mary Marquez with El Nuevo Herald. So this was the year an American president visited Havana for the first time in more than seven decades. In March, President Obama spoke to the Cuban communist leaders, but also the Cuban public.
I have come here to bury the last remnant of the Cold War in the Americas.
And then late at night, on the last Friday of November, Cuban leader Raúl Castro went on Cuban state television.
Falleció el comandante en jefe de la Revolución Cubana.
He announced Fidel Castro was dead. Parts of Miami celebrated, but in more measured ways than if the death had happened years earlier. Miriam, talk to us about what Fidel's death meant after, 12, 14 years he was out of power.
He was out of power really about 8 years, but he really wasn't in a way. You could see it at the state funeral. As far as the psyche of the country, he had moved on to, a hero status, at least by the message that the government wanted to portray.
Right.
For the youth in Cuba, they really don't care. He was sort of like the great uncle that kind of shows up for Thanksgiving or something. He is seen by many, and I experienced this when I went to Cuba a decade ago. They were complaining about corruption. They were complaining about the food lines. They were complaining about the not having enough stuff or the ability to have their own businesses. But they would always say, but Fidel is special. Fidel is really, he set the tone right for our revolution. He's our father of the revolution. He's not the problem, even though everybody else was. And so that disconnect, part of it is a system that, a system that trains kids from birth on to think a certain way, and they are. You're seeing some differences in some openings, absolutely, but that has really impacted. Now, what happened? What happened during those years? What happened in the last 2 years of the Obama
right
opening? We saw more human rights violations inside the island, while we saw more people opening businesses inside the island. So you have these two contradictions again.
And we saw an uptick in migrants leaving the island.
Huge uptick, not just by sea, but through the Central America channel and through Ecuador. So this then became an issue that's going to continue. And that, I think, was part of the issue with Castro. But I think overall, the country is, with youth, we see it over and over again. When we go there, when we interview young people, their hope is to get to America. Their hope is the American dream. That's a problem for them. They cannot continue to grow their economy if they don't have young people staying, if they have the brain drains that they've continually had throughout the last 57 years.
Sergio Bustos, a presidential visit and the death of a dictator, a momentous year when it comes to relations between the U.S. and Cuba. How do you begin to find perspective here?
I don't know. It was quite dramatic. Although I would say that in the end, with Castro's death, it was almost anticlimactic because there had been so many moments when, he's dead.
Right.
I know when I was at the Miami Herald for 10 years, we were always hearing the next rumor.
Yeah.
And I think the big question for everyone is what happens next?
Right.
And as Miriam says, I mean, even last week, I think we wrote a story at Politico, a short one, that the ladies in white leader, Berta Soler, had mm-hmm. been arrested or
mm-hmm.
detained.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same story as always. Like, you're not clear why she was detained, unclear when she was being released. Whether it was Fidel still in power or not, he's gone, and yet you're still having the human rights violations,
yeah,
the lack of, freedom.
Of liberty, right.
Of liberty,
right.
And the, again, harassment or attacks on dissidents.
Yeah. And Rosemary, I know that your newspaper, the Sun Sentinel, has looked into the immigration status of Cubans and how that has been abused and how Cubans have been able to come to the United States, qualify for government benefits, and then freely still travel back and forth. How has that shaded the 2 years of the Obama administration's efforts toward normalcy when it comes to the relationship?
Well, it is true that because of the special immigration status, people can come here, and for some, not, you know, a minority, but enough to make an impact. There's a revolving door. They come here, they commit fraud, Medicare fraud, auto insurance fraud, and then they go back home and live on the goodies. Marco Rubio and Senator or Representative Curbelo are trying to close that door. I think that there is, as change, as this, as things evolve, there is appetite for changing the immigration and status and or how it works. And the one of the questions going forward is with President-elect Trump.
Right.
He has said that I don't think that's fair that people who come from Cuba right. get to stay right away. And he has said, I'm going to strike a better deal. We need a better deal. Now, what that looks like, you know, remains to be seen. But I think people need to remember at all levels that the Cuban people, if we're really speaking and want what's best for the Cuban people, they want good relations with our country. They want the barricade lowered. They, you know, So let's start with them.
I also want to talk about Haiti here in relation to immigration. Miriam, the Haitian immigration status to some degree changed again this year. In 2010, there were some special immigration policies put into place after the earthquake. They were removed just as Hurricane Matthew devastated the island. What's been the impact?
Well, I mean, and this has been a crisis that's been going on since the 80s for Haiti, and that tension between the Cuban Adjustment Act and wet foot, dry foot mm-hmm. in the 90s allowed for Cubans, and these continuing waves of Haitians who have been returned. And it was after the earthquake that they did get some special help. And you know, we have to find a way that we deal with this little country that just it can't get on its feet. I mean, every time it tries, there's another crisis, and you have so much corruption within the country. It's difficult, and then you see the folks that come here, just how hardworking they are, mm-hmm. and how they have created their own lives here and businesses, and they're thriving in a lot of ways. So how do you bring that kind of know-how and want to do back into that little piece of island that's getting hit even by their neighbor, by Dominican Republic,
right.
which, you know,
right.
was like throwing out everyone who had been born in the Dominican Republic who was of Haitian descent. I mean, it is horrible.
Sergio, the year ended, though, with a successful, at least from the outside looking in, successful presidential election in Haiti, really a matter of months after the devastation of Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah, I hate to repeat what Miriam has said, but it really is sad that in a country that it seems like it takes, you know, again, it's a cliche, two steps forward, but then takes three steps back.
Yeah.
And then these disasters that strike, where any other country can overcome a disaster, it seems like Haiti, it just seems like another huge obstacle to finding some kind of a better future. And I still recall a story done at the Herald years ago about, I think it was about $2 billion invested in the transportation system, which is a huge economic development tool
mm-hmm.
for many countries.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that money was squandered in that they were able to build the highways, but they couldn't maintain them. So it was just a huge waste of money. And you can tell even this time around, there's almost like that fatigue on the part of donors, like, okay, well.
We saw that after Hurricane Matthew. But we also saw a bit of concern on the island of Haiti, saying we learned some lessons after the 2010 earthquake foreign aid as well, is that we want some of this to be self-generated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you wonder if the economic development tool for the country is to help the folks that are here, may perhaps stay, that are illegal, so that you have the remittances going
mm-hmm,
back
mm-hmm.
to fund the country. But truly just, you know, one of the poorest countries in the hemisphere and seems to be remaining that way for the distant future.
Sergio Bustos is the senior editor here in Florida for Politico. Mary Marquez is the executive editor at El Nuevo Herald, and Rosemary O'Hara, the editorial page editor at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. To all three of you, thank you so much for spending 2016 with us as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to the year ahead here on the Florida Roundup. Finally on the roundup, remembering those we lost in 2016. Janet Reno was South Florida through and through, from the home her parents built in Kendall, in which she lived in until she died, to her prosecutorial grit, first as Miami State Attorney and then eventually U.S. Attorney General. Historian Marvin Dunn spoke with WLRN after Reno's death in November.
Janet Reno would have prosecuted her own mama if she felt she had a reason to do it. She was the most objective, fair-minded, tough-minded person I've ever known.
Janet Reno was 78. Jose Fernandez's death was a shock. He was a pitching ace for the Marlins and a very Florida story. He escaped Cuba as a teenager, saving his mom from drowning as they made it across the Florida Straits. He died with two others when the boat they were in crashed into a rock jetty at Government Cut before dawn in September. Fans like Marcos Novina gathered at Marlins Park to remember Fernandez.
I always tell my son that I want him, you know, to be the same as Jose Fernandez, and it's really hard for me now to explain him what's going on.
And we lost the greatest of all time this year, too.
This thing keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's a matter of time. Iron Clay lost the boom.
Muhammad Ali was still Cassius Clay when he beat Sonny Liston in Miami Beach for his first boxing championship. It was here in South Florida where he would become Muhammad Ali. Ali was 74. That'll do it for the Florida Roundup this week, and for that matter, 2016. We've got one more show for the year where we look ahead at 2017. That's next week. We want to thank everybody who helped out throughout the past year here on the Florida Roundup. All the callers, all the tweeters, all those posting on Facebook. You can join that conversation on Twitter at WLRN or on Facebook at facebook.com/group/TheFloridaRoundup. The program is produced each week by Bridget O'Brien and Alicia Zuckerman. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. WLRN's program director is Peter J. Meritz. Our technical supervisor has been Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening.